So many years ago, probably around almost 30 years ago, I was remodeling a bathroom for a client, and this was one of the first bathroom remodels I ever did. And this client's design process was the most unusual I've ever seen. She had found a shower curtain that she really liked, and then made all of her design choices based on that shower curtain. Color of the walls, color of the tile, shower tile, everything had to coordinate with the shower curtain. And it occurred to me the other day that I seem to have done exactly that same thing, in that, a month ago or so, when Karen asked me if I was interested in doing a service today, I said yes, and I knew immediately that I wanted this song to be part of this service. And you can't just play this song at this point in time without actually having some things to say about it. But I didn't really want to build the whole service around this song, because then I was afraid the service would have sounded a lot like a service I gave in early June. And I thought that would have been bad form. So anyway, it's been a bit of a challenge figuring out exactly what to say this morning. I will say this: I've been thinking a lot lately about the passage of time. And that's partly due to the fact that my mother passed very peacefully after a long and happy life several months ago. And that's had me thinking not only about my mother's life, but a bit of my family's history. And it's also had me kind of recognizing that I'm next in line, so to speak. You know, when a parent passes, it has a way of getting one in touch with our own mortality. And that's not, you know, there's no sadness around that for me. There's no, it's nothing. It's actually kind of a nice opportunity to think about where I am in my life at this point, what in my life means the most to me, what I feel like I've accomplished, and what there's still left to do. So anyway, this morning, what I hope to do is weave together a few threads that all are a little bit about the passage of time. And part of it is the history of my relationship to this church. A little bit, a tiny bit, about the history of the church itself, and some of my family's history. And to say that I will weave those into a tapestry would be a little bit far-fetched. My hope is I can kind of braid it into a lanyard by the time I'm done this morning. So we'll come back to this song before the end of the service, but I'll start by saying this. My connection to this church started somewhere in the mid to late 70s. As an Allegheny student, I would venture into town now and then. And at the time, I was very interested in architecture, and that's an interest that has stayed with me throughout my whole life. And every time that I would come through town, I would sit and take notice of this building right here, this beautiful neoclassical temple-like building. And I'd always wonder, like, what goes on in that building? Well, a couple of decades later, I had the chance to find out what goes on in this building. I happened to be dragged, not quite kicking and screaming, but encouraged to participate in a production that the Meadville Community Theater was doing, 19, no, not 19, 1776. And And so I took a two-bit part in that. And it turned out that a number of people that were in that production were connected members of the Unitarian Church, including Jim Snyder, a longtime member, Mary Lou Bruner directed the play, and a number of others that, you know, I'm going to allude, their names will elude me at the moment. But so one day, Jim Snyder said, "Hey, every so often, our church has a dinner down at the parish house. It's just a really casual kind of get-together thing, probably potluck. They called it a 659er for reasons that I'll never understand why." But so I thought, yeah, sure, why not? I understood at that point that he was talking about this building, and that was the fact that I liked Jim and I liked these other Unitarians, and that it was connected to this building. I thought, why not? Well, it turned out that I really enjoyed the people I met that night. I didn't know what the Unitarian Church was all about, but I learned a little bit about it. My mother grew up in a very traditional Quaker family, and the most significant religious experiences of my growing up were from that side of the family. So the Quaker tradition was one that resonated for me more than any other religious experience that I've had. And Unitarian Church seemed like probably the closest thing to a Quaker meeting that I was going to find in this town. And it also happened that at that moment in time, the church was between ministers. So on different weeks, different members of the congregation were taking over the pulpit and speaking, etc. And so the lack of a minister, that felt very comfortable and natural to me. So I started attending and became a member. And I would say my connection to the church has waxed and waned over the last 30 years. Is that what you said? We joined at right about the same time. But even during the periods in which my involvement with the church has been on the wane, one would say, I've always really appreciated the fact that this church is here in this town. And I've always loved this building. And even if I wasn't coming down to Sunday morning services, I've maintained a nice relationship with this building over those 30 years. I remember when I did this project that Josh mentioned, and that was about 25 years ago, thinking what an honor it was to be working on this beautiful building that at the time was probably 165 years old. It just felt like a real honor, and it continues to be an honor to me to kind of 30 years later to still be tinkering with this space that I love. I mentioned that my mother's side of the family was Quaker. And my grandmother, I do not have a memory of my grandfather because he died probably when I was just a few years old. But my memory of my grandmother is so vivid in my mind. She was one of these people. She was very, very proper, kind of an imposing figure, and for a young kid, at times a little bit intimidating. And she would say things like, if we were visiting her in her house and we were at the breakfast table, she would say things like, she was old school Quaker. She would say things like, "Lenbo, thee hasn't eaten thy prunes." And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to eat these prunes before I get up from the table. And why does she call me Lenbo? I just never understood. Well, so she and her husband, my grandfather, they were real social and political activists of their day. And I have a memory of being at my aunt and uncle's house in Philly, which is where my mother grew up, and seeing a photo, an old black and white photo, of my grandmother sitting in the front pew of a Quaker meeting somewhere, probably the one she was connected to, and standing just in front of her was her son-in-law, the father of my favorite uncle. His name was Elton Trueblood, who at in his day was a pretty respected writer and theologian. And standing next to Elton Trueblood was Martin Luther King Jr. And one could only guess that what was happening was that Martin Luther King was about to address this congregation in this Quaker meeting, and that Elton was making the introduction. I asked my mother years later, and at the time I just saw it, I was old enough to know what I was looking at, but just barely. And I asked my mother years later, "Mom, that photo of Grandmother Betty with Elton and Martin Luther King, did I get that right? Did I really see that?" "Yes, yes, you did. That happened." "Mom, why do we not have a copy of that photo framed hanging in our house someplace?" Well, it turned out that my mother was rather indifferent at best to my grandparents' social activism. And not because she disagreed with their causes at all, but because when she was growing up, she felt like she had been parented not by her own parents, but by the help. My grandfather at the time, he was must have been a pretty successful businessman, before stepping away from his business to administer the conscientious objector camps that were set up throughout the country. I'm assuming this was during the Korean War. And then when he came back from that, he then served as provost of Earlham College, a Quaker school much the same size as Allegheny, for the rest of his years. Anyway, my mother felt like Mom and Dad were never around because they were always in these committee meetings or going here, going there. And so she shared very little, almost none of that with us. But that photo always stuck with me. Years later, on several occasions, and normally after a glass of wine, my mother would would say to both Belinda and I, she would tell the story about feeling neglected by her parents when growing up, and feeling a lot of resentment towards her mother in particular for that reason. And she would tell us a story about one day I wrote my mother a letter telling her all of this, and telling her that it felt like she had neglected her family. And her grandmother wrote back, her mother wrote back, my grandmother wrote back and said, "Dear, my family was always very important to me, but what mattered the most was what she said in the vernacular of the time, she said, what mattered the most to me was the family of man." The family of people. And it's the family of people that kind of connects us back to the song that we played during the meditation. And I have to say, I was telling Amy, just a couple of days ago, when we first got together to practice this song, I told her that I felt really ambivalent about playing it this morning, because on the one hand, it's a beautiful, beautiful song. And at the same time, it seems to be so on point with what we in this country are experiencing at the moment. At the same time, it also seems to have a heavy tone of resignation. And I said to Amy, and I'm reluctant to sing this, because resignation is not what we should be feeling right now. Resignation is what we can't be feeling right now. And Amy said to me, "Well," she said, "to me, the song makes perfect sense. And if people are feeling resignation, that's understandable, given what's going on." And I recognize that there's moments in which I feel that same resignation. But I also make a point to myself of recognizing that can't happen right now. This circles back into a bit of the church's history. These are the words of Theodore Parker, a mid-1800s abolitionist and Unitarian minister, who in a speech delivered in the hall of the Massachusetts State House before the Massachusetts Anti-Slavery Convention on a Friday night on January 29, 1858, said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. And from what I see, I am sure that it bends towards justice." Now, those words, or words very similar to that, sounded familiar to me because I think many of us are familiar with those words, that Martin Luther King incorporated those words into, or a paraphrase of those words, into a number of his speeches that he gave during the mid-60s. More recently, since he's been out of office, I was watching just this morning a video clip of Barack Obama being interviewed. And you could tell he was out of office because his gray hair was a lot grayer than it was at the time. And he's talking, you understand the context. And he said, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Except it doesn't bend on its own. It bends because we pull it in the direction of justice. And when we don't, it doesn't happen automatically, just like democracy is not self-executing. It requires effort. It requires will." And I will remind everyone, next weekend is a very, very busy weekend for all of us here. The church has an awful lot going on. What else is going on next Saturday? October 18th, the second No Kings Day. Nationwide protests to push back in whatever way we can, peacefully, against the overreach of the current administration. That'll be happening, as I understand it, that's part of, I think they've said there's 2,500 different events planned around the country. The last No Kings Day, there was, I think, close to 2,000, and they've estimated that there were 5 million people that probably came out to protest that day. So, with any luck and fortitude, there will be even more this Saturday. In Meadville, that's from 2 to 4, just in time. It finishes just in time to find your way back over to here for the bicentennial celebration. And I'll close with just this one other quote, maybe two quotes if we have time. The importance not just of resistance, but of peaceful resistance. For several different reasons. One, it's the right thing to do. Two, historians that pay attention to this have documented that peaceful efforts to throw off tyranny are always more successful than non-peaceful ones by about 2 to 1. And at this current moment in time, it seems clear that what the administration is attempting to do is to set up, you know, bringing troops into Chicago, bringing troops into Portland, and not just troops that are being there, but at least in Chicago, being quite aggressive. It seems like they're trying to set off an event that's not peaceful, perhaps as an opportunity to bring the foot down a little bit more. Prior to the No Kings Day in last June, there was another event, Hands Off, April 15th. My wife and I and two of our daughters ventured to Washington, D.C. for that event and were met by my brother and his wife. And we got pulled into D.C. about maybe an hour and a half before the event took place, and we're wandering around the historic parts of D.C., and went to the Martin Luther King Memorial. And if you haven't seen it, it's an amazing statue of him and this beautiful marble piece with many, many quotes of his over the years. And one jumped out at me that pertains to this. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.